This is Darcy Ungaro, and welcome to the NZ Everyday Investor Podcast. Whether it's in property, Bitcoin, shares, or business, this is a show designed to equip the everyday Kiwi make better investment decisions. The NZ Everyday Investor Podcast is brought to you by podcasts.nz in conjunction with Ungaro & Co. Financial Services. Please remember, none of this is financial advice. We hope you enjoy the show. So with me today is a very special guest, Derek Blank. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. It's an absolute pleasure. Derek, this is your second time on the show. Yeah. Again, double thank you for coming along. And last time you came along, we spoke about KiwiSaver.
We did.
Now, also joined with us today is a very, very special guest, Pumpkin.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, good Pumpkin is a vegetable. Pumpkin is a something that's found in a typical garden.
It's fat and orange.
It is fat and orange.
It's a little bit of an insult.
It is, isn't it? But no, so Pumpkin's going to join us as let's call Pumpkin the voice of reason, a balanced voice, someone who is speaking on behalf of the everyday Kiwi who is listening, trying to sort of bring us back to reality if we get off course and go on a straight tangent. Is that cool?
That sounds great. I can be very everyday.
Let's talk about your background, actually, Pumpkin. Okay. Tell us a little bit about yourself. We may or may not have a couple of courgettes and a squash together. What do you do for a crust, Pumpkin?
I'm a home executive. I'm a stay-at-home mum. But once upon a time, I was a autism therapist and a behavioral therapist. And then following that, I was a primary school teacher.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for joining us. See, an everyday Kiwi right there. That just happened. Just for some background, my name's Darcy. I'm a financial advisor. I work in the area of mortgages and insurance. And I've been doing that for about 15 years through our business, Ungaro & Co. Financial Services. Actually, we're a team of three now. So we're a real, real small boutique team operating in Freeman's Bay, Auckland City Fringe. And Derek, tell us about yourself, Derek. We know that you're a financial advisor as well. You're an authorized financial advisor, a little bit different to us. You work primarily in the area of insurance and investments.
Correct. Yes. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your personal world.
Personal world.
So yeah. Prove to us that you're an everyday person.
I've also got my own pumpkin and a couple of squashes. very different to these two. And I've been in the financial services industry for 15 odd years. Yeah. And sort of fell into it and love it. It's awesome.
Last, I think we talked about this last time. I think you're building or you have a pool. You have a pool.
Have
right?
a pool.
You have yes. a pool. That's right. Yeah. That's one thing we have in common is that we both have our weekends ruined by scraping dead leaves, worms, and the odd bit of roadkill out of the bottom of our pool. Good time. So today, what are we talking about today? So today we're going to talk a little bit about something called the NZX or the New Zealand share market. The New Zealand share market or any share market is just one of the places where you can invest in, right?
Absolutely.
It's one of the places. And if you're involved in KiwiSaver, you're probably investing in it already, directly or indirectly. A lot of KiwiSaver funds, especially in New Zealand, will have a little bit of action in that.
So can I just interrupt and
That's
ask,
what you're here for, Pumpkin.
I'm the interrupter. Is KiwiSaver on the stock exchange? Is that what you're saying?
That's a good question.
It is a good question.
Derek can answer that one.
So, no, KiwiSaver is a, how do we phrase this? KiwiSaver is, I guess, a initiative or a program. It's probably the best way to describe that. And within KiwiSaver, you invest in property or shares or money in the bank or in fixed interest. So you don't actually invest into KiwiSaver. KiwiSaver is the government badge, if you like, on an investment.
Right. Okay.
You're still looking puzzled.
Well, I'm thinking, like, I don't know a lot about KiwiSaver apart from the fact that we put money into it and that the government will kick in a bit of money towards our kids' first house. Is that right? Something like that.
You're doing good. You're actually doing better than most. So, well done.
And I know that you can take your KiwiSaver money out to, like, buy a house or something like that.
Correct. Your first house.
Yes.
No, absolutely. So while you're putting money into what you think is KiwiSaver, you're not actually, KiwiSaver doesn't have a value per se. Right. Your account balance within KiwiSaver has the value. So think of it as a badge. It's a badge from the government.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a brand.
It works a certain way. So when you're not necessarily investing in KiwiSaver, if you're enrolled in KiwiSaver, it means that you've signed up with a fund manager, if you like, and you're contributing regularly, if you're an employee, your employer is matching those contributions up to a certain level. And then every year you're getting $521 from the government as a tax credit, which also goes in your balance.
Okay.
So it goes in, and it basically it's getting invested on your behalf, but you get to choose what kind of fund you're involved in. So there's a range of funds, and anybody who's listening, they can go along to, I think it was episode 2 that you came along with.
I think it was,
so
yeah.
One of our very first ones, Derek came along and spoke specifically on KiwiSaver, and I encourage you to check out that episode because we go into a lot more detail with KiwiSaver. But you get to choose. That's the cool thing with KiwiSaver. You get to choose where that money gets invested on your behalf. Do you want it to be really safe and conservative at the risk of some growth in the long term? Then you'd go into what Derek's calling fixed interest or cash, which is kind of like putting it in your savings account at the bank, more or less. Not a lot of fun stuff is going to happen there, but for argument's sake, it's as safe as it's going to get. And then you can progressively slide up towards the more spicy stuff, which is investing in property and shares.
Right.
And that's where the stock market would be included in where that investment stuff gets shoveled off to. So if you're putting aside $100 a week in your KiwiSaver and you've selected, let's go high risk, then you're probably going to be investing a lot in shares. Cool?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's pretty straight, isn't it?
Yeah.
In terms of an explanation. And you get it, Pumpkin? You with us?
I think so. I feel smarter already.
Look at that. It's working. It's working. Okay. So we're talking today, though, about the stock market, and particularly we're talking about the relationship, I guess, between the U.S. stock market, the New Zealand stock market. We're going to talk a little bit about the what's called the U.S. Fed and New Zealand's OCR and the relationship between the two. And, you know, the little bit of jargon, but the more you can kind of engage with what we're talking about here, the more you'll understand that the share market isn't necessarily a scary place to be. It's exciting, and there's a lot of stuff going on. The New Zealand's share market in particular actually is pretty impressive. It punches above its weight. And so we're going to talk about that sort of stuff. And maybe to start with, just a little bit of background in terms of the stock market, because you might be listening and you might be thinking, well, yeah, but my parents actually lost a lot back in the late 80s and 87 stock market crash. You know, our family lost quite a bit. And there might be a family memory that you might also have inherited growing up in the 80s. A really negative experience. So, Derek, we're not going to go into a lot of full on detail here, and don't hold us to any of these numbers. But, Derek, obviously you would have been a child probably as well.
I was six.
You were six.
Yeah.
My goodness, how old would I have been? I would have been older than that, but not much older than that. Hmm. And I remember this. So, in 1987, just for people who are listening, there was a massive correction in October of 1987 in the stock market, where basically the value of all of those stocks, and stocks are just more or less, let's call them shares and companies. The shares in all these companies just went to the bottom. They just collapse. And there was a big decline, big sharp decline in value in the stock market. And people who were borrowing against the value of their home, they were doing all sorts of crazy things before that, trying to get in. The market was going crazy. It was good times. Everybody was, you know, bathing in champagne and driving brand new cars and all the rest of it. And then October 1987 hit, and the values washed away. People lost millions. So it was a really, really negative, negative time. And when I was a kid in Canada, there was going simultaneous to that was a property market crash. The stock market crashed, then the property market corrected. My family was a little bit exposed in property, so we suffered as well as a family when the property market collapsed. And that was a really, really negative marker in my memory. And, you know, being six, did you say, is that what you were, Derek?
Six, yeah.
You were six. So you might not have been too cognizant of the time, but later on you would have no doubt learned a little bit about that, I guess, right? Mm. And just speaking to that a little bit, you know, take us through that. Crashes are kind of normal, right? Every now and then?
Yeah, every now and then. They're going to happen every now and then.
Corrections, rather. I guess corrections are probably better, yeah.
Yeah. And probably the most, probably a more relevant recent experience of most of our listeners might be the GFC.
Yeah.
You know, so across the world, share markets dropped about 40% in value in 1 year.
In 2008. 2008,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So the GFC, global financial crisis.
Yeah.
Good times. You know, being in the mortgage industry primarily myself,
yeah,
we saw interest rates, you know, go from mid tens down to mid fives. Interest rates went down.
Yeah.
Property prices went down a little bit.
Yeah.
Nationally, they went down a little bit, but New Zealand did actually pretty well, I think, overall, and we survived.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did very well.
Yeah.
So, you know, just to put that in perspective, so share markets around the world dropped about 40%. If you had a typical balanced fund within your KiwiSaver, you might have 50% of every dollar you put into KiwiSaver might be in either shares or property. And so if you say you had 40 cents and every dollar was in the share market, you would have lost, I should have chosen an easier number. Let's say just a little bit less than half. So your portfolio would have probably dropped around about 17% within that year.
Yeah.
So that was, I'm basing my knowledge of this from the movie I saw, The Big Short.
Hey, that's a good movie as well.
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen that?
I need to see it.
That was good. All about that, right?
So, yeah, actually it was. So The Big Short. Now
I'm writing it down.
Yeah, The Big Short. Check it out. It's a fantastic movie. But yeah, that's absolutely that was about the GFC.
That was, so we're saying that that massive crash happened because people were buying up houses that didn't exist or something like that.
It's a bit more around the GFC, the main catalyst.
Yeah.
For the GFC would have been, I'm going to guess, you know, the over exuberant lending practices at the time, where if you had a pulse, you can get a mortgage from the bank and you could you know, if you were a stripper, you could buy 20 different investment properties and no taxable income, right? That's why I use strippers as an example, because technically they don't have a lot of taxable income or clothes. So they're the best example that I can use. And I'm not thinking too much about them right now. But I'm totally distracted. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah. So that was the main catalyst for the GFC.
Right. Know? So how do we know that something like that's not going to happen again? Like, why should we invest in the stock exchange if something crazy like that is going to happen?
I'll answer that a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Within 2 years of the GFC occurring,
mm-hmm.
the value of the share market was pretty much back to where it was before the crash.
Right.
So what history has taught us is that there are going to be corrections from time to time, but more or less, if history is correct, things will get back to where they were within 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm. So big crashes like that happen because
a number of different reasons.
Okay. So it's not something we can sort of predict and go, oh, stay clear.
No.
Okay.
So a good fund manager who is, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, an active fund manager, through their own analysis and research, may try to predict when that occurs before it happens.
And the main lesson there, I guess, is that markets aren't linear. So if you wanted to regularly invest in the stock market, then the value of what you're investing in won't steadily and linearly increase in value. It'll always be a rough, bumpy ride up.
Mm.
But in the long run, and given enough time, it's a good thing to do, to be exposed and to play in the stock market. I shouldn't use that word play. To invest and to partake of that market is a good practice over the long term, because as we'll talk about shortly, it increases in value over the long run. But in the short run, depending on when you're getting in, when your start date is, there may be a dip. And even just recently, like even in the last 2 months, we've seen a couple of dips, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're saving for something that you need within the next, you know, 3 years, for argument's sake, share market's probably not the best place to have that money.
Right.
But if you're looking at 5 years plus,
okay,
you know, history tells us you'd be better off.
You'd be better off in the long run. And again, the reason why I just wanted to start with that is that I guess everybody's got a different understanding of where this what the stock market means. But often there's an emotional response that's triggered in people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to a certain extent, a lot of people haven't engaged with the stock market. It is a little bit more complex than just putting it in your savings account. But I think a lot of it has been, there's this negative background feeling that it's too dangerous and people have been burned, so stay away. Derek, like, do you find that's sometimes when you're dealing with your clients, because you probably deal with this a bit more than I do, but do you get that response from people a bit?
Occasionally. I think since the introduction of KiwiSaver, I think the general financial literacy of New Zealanders has improved. And I think people understand that their portfolio is going to go up and down in value generally. But
right.
I guess people wouldn't be talking to me if they didn't want to invest in the
that's right.
share market.
And it has been doing okay up until recently, right? Like it actually has been, you know, and when I say up until recently, it was just really in February? It just had a little bit
Waitangi
of a,
Day was a, yeah, was a dark day globally.
Okay, cool. Mm. So let's just maybe head to this sheet here and just kind of pick on February to start with. Do you want to just talk us through a little bit about what happened in the New Zealand stock market?
So before I kick into that, if it's okay, Darcy, what I might do is just really quickly, the New Zealand stock market is often, you might have heard of the NZX 50. What that is really saying is that is the top 50 companies that are on the New Zealand share market. So there are names like Air New Zealand, Auckland Airport, Z Energy, some of the banks, Trade Me, Zero, or for the time being, are companies that are on the New Zealand stock market. So when we talk about the NZX 50, it's a combination of the top 50 companies in New Zealand that are on the share market.
Right. Makes sense. Yes. The 50 are the best.
Right.
So it's kind of like it's an index, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. So in terms of, I guess, all through 2017 and even into January of 2018, markets were fairly stable. There wasn't too much what we call volatility. So there wasn't too much downward pressure on markets. So in February, globally, share markets took a bit of a hammering. And, for round numbers, let's say they were down about 10% over the month.
So if you had $100 invested globally in the share market, you've just lost 10 bucks that month.
Yeah.
In value.
Yeah. So in New Zealand, in February, the New Zealand stock market, the NZX 50, was down just under about 0.9%. So when you think you got money invested in other countries, you could have done 10 times as worse as what you did in the New Zealand stock market.
Okay, so it did better. Well, it suffered less.
Yes.
Suffered less. New Zealand suffered less during that period than globally.
Yeah. And when you dig a little bit deeper into that, only 7 of the 50 companies in the New Zealand stock market had a positive return. So 43% out of the 50 had a negative return, 7 had a positive return. If you look a little deeper than that, there was one outstanding performer in a company called A2 Milk, who you may or may not have heard of.
Yeah, A2 Milk.
Vaguely.
It's a fascinating story anyway, because I won't go into that in too much detail, but they had a phenomenal return in that month of positive 44%. So there was something going on within that business that made their share price more valuable to investors, which pushed the price up. If you had invested in the New Zealand stock market, but you didn't invest in A2 Milk, you had a return more comparable to what the rest of the world experienced. But if you did have A2 Milk within your portfolio, then you were a far, far stronger performer.
So we don't know why everyone sort of started doing badly then?
Oh, no, we do. Should I dive into that? So globally, there were two key triggers for why things went pear-shaped. Firstly, there was, you might recall, the trade war dramas between China and the US. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of chest pumping between a couple of people in power there.
There was a horse in a hospital. Sorry, no one probably gets what I'm saying, but
check out John Mulaney.
Yeah, that's right. Check out John Mulaney, the comedian. He has a great analogy for describing one of those players as a horse in a hospital.
I wonder which one.
Yeah.
So there's obviously a lot of banter around slapping on tariffs and things like that. So, and obviously by doing that, it would be bad for exporters and et cetera, et cetera. The other thing that was ironically bad news for the share market was positive economic data coming out of the US.
Tell us about that. This is really interesting. I like this one.
With positive economic data, and by that means that the outlook's actually more positive than what economists had expected, means that could have an upward pressure on inflation. Mm-hmm. Which means that things are going to cost more and things like that.
And I'll just pause you there just to make sure that we understand what inflation means. You know, the prices go up, things get more expensive, therefore there's pressure on people to get paid more money so that they can pay more prices, and it creates a spiral of prices upwards.
All because they're doing better.
All because they're doing well.
Okay.
And so the interest rates traditionally, and via the OCR in New Zealand, the official cash rate, the interest rates increase. It's kind of like, I always think about it like chemotherapy. You know, it's bad because you're actually increasing the costs. You're making it harder for people.
Yeah.
But that actually takes some of the heat out of the economy, and then inflationary pressures subside.
Yeah.
Cool.
And the rationale for that is that if interest rates are rising, then at a macro level, you're more likely to be saving money than spending money because you're getting a higher return for your money.
Yeah, it takes money out of circulation.
Yeah.
So if you had $1,000 and is everything was getting really expensive, you're disincentivized to spend it because things are really expensive, and you end up just saving it in the bank because you're getting a much higher interest rate.
Yes. That's not confusing at all.
No, you're getting glazy.
That's okay.
Glazed and roasted pumpkin over here is not getting
it. No, it sounds like the US does well, we do badly.
Oh, no. So it was globally. No? It wasn't just us.
So it was everybody did badly because the US did well?
Because people were scared that then the interest rate was going to rise.
Right.
Earlier than expected. Right. And that means that things are going to cost more, like mortgages, mm-hmm. for a start, and therefore have less money to save or spend.
So we want them to do badly.
Not necessarily. It's probably more a story of expectation, right?
Yeah.
I think that's what you're getting at, right? Yeah. Like if things happen outside of what the norm, like outside of what people are expecting, mm-hmm. then that's when the market can react.
Yeah.
You either get a little bit more excited, oh, things are actually pretty good, woo, we're going up now, or we're going to go down now because we didn't actually expect it to go like that. We priced it in that it would go a certain way, and now you're changing the rules on us.
Yeah.
We're going to freak out. That's kind of how it works.
And actually, globally, we're living in an environment where interest rates are very low,
mm-hmm.
and we do need to get back to a point where they are more average,
mm-hmm.
over the long term. Because if there is another, one of the reasons we did so well as a country in the GFC, and I am going to tangent here.
Yeah, this is a good tangent.
Our official cash rate that's set by the government, which then affects the cost of mortgages and things like that, was very, very high. Mm-hmm. So the government, as Darcy touched on before, were able to drop that pretty quickly over a period of months, which means that then costs you less to borrow money from the bank and pay your mortgage. So then you have more money to spend in your mm-hmm. back pocket, or you could pay more debt down and things like that.
And just to bring this home a little bit, and I think you might mention this, you might remember this, Pumpkin, but during the GFC in 2008,
mm-hmm.
We were, and still are, to a much greater extent actually, heavily in debt, and therefore interest as a percentage of our overall household expenses, interest was a significant expense, and it still is, right? But in the GFC, when things were actually a little bit shaky, our biggest expense almost halved. Like it was a significant reduction in our expenses, so we were able to sail through that incredibly tumultuous season relatively well because of that. So if, imagine that as an economic-wide scenario where all of a sudden at the push of a button, the government can effectively reduce the biggest expense that households have, interest, just like that. That means that if there's an economic shock, if things are going really badly, people can sail through it easier. And that's kind of what you're talking about. We went through the GFC really well because in aggregate, households across New Zealand faced a smaller interest bill.
Yeah.
They were staggered because of fixed rates. You had to wait for your fixed rate to expire.
Yeah.
And during that period of time, people were breaking their mortgages, paying a big fee to break their mortgage just to get the lower repayments that were available. But yeah, that was an interesting time. And I think New Zealand did do really well, didn't it?
Yeah. And you compare that to countries in Europe who their OCR equivalent was already very low before the OCR, before the GFC. So they didn't have much room to move.
Yes.
And in fact, there are some countries where you literally, if you had money sitting in the bank, like here we might expect to get a small payment from the bank for the privilege of having money in the bank, they would actually receive a bill from their bank because their interest rates were negative, which is a whole other world.
That's
so,
a shocker.
Because they didn't have the space to move.
No, right? That's right.
So yeah, imagine having to pay your bank the privilege of saving with them. And now you can kind of see why globally there's all this extra money floating around because there's all this money out there looking for a home, looking for a higher rate of return, and lo and behold, asset prices go up, including the stock market. Mm. And so they get over exuberant, and then they're more volatile. They're more exposed to a price correction. And that's why when there is a change, it gets a little bit, I'm probably getting ahead of myself, but you can kind of piece it all together, and then one thing affects the other. And now you can understand why the share market has been doing really well. And then it's normal to get these little corrections every now and then where a little bit of the growth is washed away and it consolidates, it rebuilds.
Yeah, cool. No, absolutely.
All right. So you were talking, Derek, then about how if it wasn't for a couple of these companies inside the NZX 50, New Zealand would have done pretty bad as well.
Yes, correct.
But luckily, you know, inside the NZX 50, the top 50, there were a couple of players who punched above their weight and it offset it.
Yeah.
Players like A2. So where does that put us now then in terms of performance? Like, I know we've had a couple of little mini corrections overseas and in New Zealand. Seems like we're a bit more resilient. Mm-hmm. But overall, you know, we're reading tea leaves a little bit. But do you think it's going to persist, or do you think we're kind of on the other end of it now?
My belief is that we'll see a lot more of this.
More volatility?
More ups and downs.
More extreme price changes within a short period of time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Up and down.
Up and down.
Well, down and up.
Depending on which side of the world you're on.
Because of just what's going on in the world.
Because the horse in the freaking hospital.
Because of the horse.
Yeah. A number of reasons, but there's a lot of geopolitical risks at the moment.
So it really has a big impact on just like everyday people.
It does.
All that stuff, you know, that you hear about in the news going on.
Yep.
It filters down to our finances.
Absolutely.
And if you think about someone who's just about to retire, right? Let's say you had a big chunk of money just in KiwiSaver, and you're 64 years old, and you were in the highest growth option you can get your hands on, and you're just about to retire, and this volatility hits right when you're about to cash out. That would be unfortunate, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
So you'd probably want to get some financial advice, wouldn't you, Derek?
You totally would. And also on the other end of the spectrum, if you're about to buy your first home and using the KiwiSaver first home withdrawal ability, you know, likewise, if you found your perfect home you wanted to buy and you had 50 grand sitting in there, which is going to go towards your deposit, and then the market has another correction and all of a sudden you've only got 35 grand sitting in there, that could be the difference between getting your dream home or not. So.
Yeah, like you might have just signed up on that contract to buy that first home. And that, you needed that to make up your legal required minimum deposit of 20%. Mm. And then, lo and behold, you just lost 5 grand, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of really, you always have to think about what's coming next. It's not just about, right, I'm going to put some money over here, put some money over there. What's your strategy? What's your thinking? What are you trying to achieve?
Get advice
every time. Excellent. Now, should we just talk a little bit about the property market versus share market?
So I came across a very interesting sales tool the other day, or we'll call it a sales tool, that's what it is, that ANZ put out actually.
ANZ Bank.
And what it showed was if you had $10,000 in 1989, so just after the 87 stock crash that we were talking about earlier. So in December of 1989, if you had $10,000 and you put that in the New Zealand Stock Exchange or stock market, didn't make any deposits, didn't make any withdrawals, that $10,000 would be worth $113,000 today.
$113,000 today.
Yeah. So it's
so back in 1989, so how many years ago? We're talking about, I can't even think right now. What is it?
Call it 30.
Thank you.
Not quite. Yeah.
Right. Not quite. 30 years ago, you would have been 9 years old, right? If you managed to get your hands on 10 grand when you were 9 years old, well done.
Yeah.
First and foremost. And if you didn't spend it on Lego, well done again. But you put it in the stock market in what, the NZX 50 or the equivalent of what it would have been back then?
Yeah, the equivalent. Yep.
Yep. And you don't withdraw, you don't sell any of your shares, you just leave them put. Then the value of all those shares today would be worth $113,000.
Correct.
Amazing.
That is amazing.
Good.
That is pretty not phenomenal. A bad deal.
It's a pretty good deal. And it's better than the Australian stock market.
Yeah. So the Aussies, obviously, they have a similar stock market. And if you had put that same $10,000 into the Australian stock market, it would now be worth $97,000.
Right.
So why is ours better?
Because you moved here roughly around that time.
Oh, I did in 1990.
Look at that.
It's all thanks to me.
It's the transmutation of pumpkins across the Tasman.
I'm going to answer that very shortly, okay? Because it's a good question. It's a nice segue into the next section. But if you had $10,000 in 1989 and you put that in an average property in New Zealand, the value of that today, what do you think, pumpkin, that would be worth today compared to the numbers we've spoken about?
Oh, heck.
You know?
$10,000 into property, what would it be worth today?
Oh, $150? I don't know.
And that would be a very common answer. Yeah. You'd expect property to have far outperformed the New Zealand share market.
Mm.
It's actually only worth $58,000.
Oh, dear.
So
that's not good.
And we've got to bear in mind that's looking at the average house in New Zealand, not just Auckland.
Right.
It's taken into account regions and all those sort of good things as well. So it's an average.
Less than half. It's less than half.
Yeah.
So you put that 10 grand in property in 1989 and that's less than half of what it would be worth if you put it in the stock market. That's interesting. And I think that's kind of counterintuitive. It's kind of counter what you would probably think naturally and what most people would think. Why?
Fascinating.
Why? Tell us why.
Why would people think?
No. Why is the difference? Why the difference in the markets? I mean, it might be an obvious answer, but I'm going to guess you're going to tell me that it's just bricks and mortars and it's not actually producing an income and producing widgets apart from a roof over people's heads.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting one, the why question, because really price of anything is determined by supply and demand is basic economic theory. But we do know, and if you listen to season two of this recording, when we talk about KiwiSaver, investing
season one.
It's
available
on
Netflix, I'm sure. It's not
available on Netflix. We talked about how share market performs better over the long term than any other sector, with higher risks and ups and downs along the way. Mm-hmm. Whereas property is the next riskiest with the next highest return.
So it does make sense when you look at it from that. So if you think about, there's four components in the typical KiwiSaver fund. Mm-hmm. You've got your stock market mix, and then you've got your property bit, mm-hmm. and then you've got your fixed interest stuff like mm-hmm. bonds, and then you've got cash.
Yeah.
Yeah, it goes down in terms of risk from there.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just gonna go first here and just give you a reason why I think people are into property so much.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I think, you know, for the everyday investor in New Zealand, this is a very, very common thing to own investment properties and to treat almost like your own home as an investment. Which, you know, the jury's still out on what I think on that. I don't know whether that's good or bad. That you're thinking that your own home is an investment. It's just your home. You're living in it. But a lot of people are into property and they've done really well in property. And I'm going to suggest that the reason why they've done well isn't because the market itself has done really well. It's because it's a leveraged market. It's leveraged. Whatever effort, whatever you put in, whatever skin you put in the game is multiplied.
So you think it's just become so popular, the whole property thing, you know, like a fad that has stayed, that it's increased the value?
Sort of, a little bit like that. But I think it's also... that's where leverage plays well. It's so easy to get a mortgage to buy a property. And you can borrow, you know, if you had $150,000, you could buy a property that's worth roughly $450,000 right now, mm-hmm. because you can get a mortgage for the difference. And the gain that you get in the value is worked out on the change in the price value. The bank doesn't get a share of the value gain. They just get their money back plus interest. So you get all the capital gains. So in a rising market, if you put that $10,000 in back in 1989 and you applied leverage to it, then now you can actually start to get amazing gains because you borrow money from the bank and you can buy more than just $10,000 worth of property, and all of the gains overall are all yours. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Sort of, kind of?
Yeah.
So leverage is the key, and I think that's why... probably preceding 1987, where that big crash happened, the reason why so many people lost so badly is because they were playing with leverage in the stock market. And when it went down significantly, it had a massive impact on people, because any gains or any losses that you experience in a market get multiplied when you use leverage.
So that makes me wonder... if you're saying that there's been so much leverage on property, does that mean we're going to have a crash like the stock exchange? If you thought it was leveraged and then it crashed?
That's the risk, right? Well, it doesn't, like, you know, the fact that there's leverage there, in some cases, maybe that increases the likelihood of a correction, maybe. And I guess just point to the GFC as a good example of that. But I think what we've learned from the GFC is that we have to be really careful, or the banks have to be incredibly careful. And the banks have reduced their appetite for lending significantly since then. Like I remember setting up mortgages for clients who only had 5% of the value of two properties. They only had 5% in equity. So $100,000 of money back then would enable you to get $2 million worth of property. $100,000, $2 million worth of property, that's 5%. It was insane.
I had my first mortgage in 2007.
Yeah.
I had no deposit.
Really? Is that right? So you replaced one of those.
I had a negative net worth because I had a student loan.
Is that right?
Mm. Wow.
But yeah, wife and I bought our first house. We obviously were earning okay incomes, but we had no deposit. Bought a house on the North Shore in Auckland for about $315,000, and that was our debt. So right? I was able to use my father as a deposit. I used some of his
guarantor.
Guarantor, yeah. Yeah. So, and that gave the bank a bit of comfort. But, it'd be very hard to get 100%. I imagine. I'm not a lending expert.
It's just not going to happen. Yeah, yeah. It's not going to You need to have 20% deposit, or if you're very lucky at the moment, if you're a first home buyer, you can technically still buy a first home with 5% deposit, but it's just so hard to get. Mm. The banks, it's like gold. The banks only have so much that they can lend out, and your incomes have to be through the roof to be able to qualify for it. So in other words, you have to prove that you don't need the money to be able to get the money, which is perverse. You probably don't remember Pumpkin, but when we bought our first home, I had saved from when I first started, I think it was around about $17,500 deposit.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And I still had a student loan. I think I had car finance as well, which is a big no-no, but I had that as well. And probably really similar to you, actually, Derek. It would have been a negative equity situation when we bought our first home. And we're just so fortunate now that we were able to do that, because we then subsequently bought investment properties, and now we own a much bigger home as a result of that move back then. So it's so incredibly tough for first home buyers, and that's probably a whole other topic, right? Mm. But leverage is the magic weapon that we've probably all used in this room to be able to build wealth in property, and that has persisted. But the banks have pulled back so much. So using that example before, where you could have as little as 5% deposit back then to own two properties, one that you live in, one that's a rental. That's only, what did I say? That's only $100,000 that you would need. Today, if you did that, you would need $550,000.
Wow.
So what that does as an overall system is it creates more certainty, because there's more people who have skin in the game rather than just bank money, rather than this steroidal sort of infusion of money. It's actually real skin in the game by borrowers. So there you go. Big difference between two markets. The share market goes crazy in the long term. It's awesome. The property market is a little less spicy, but leverage is all the difference. Mm. And I think leverage can get you into trouble. You got to be careful, all the rest of it. Mm. Seek financial advice. Moving along before we finish up, do you want to just speak a little bit, Derek, about the US Fed and the OCR, just to finish up on, because a lot of people, I think, who have debt, and our listeners, I'm going to guess a lot of people probably have significant levels of debt. Mm-hmm. If they do own their own property, especially in Auckland City, or nationwide, there's a lot of debt out there, and we're quite vulnerable to changes in interest rates. Mm-hmm. Therefore, what would it look like if we had a change in interest rates? It would be pretty bad. How does the US Fed indirectly influence our interest rates that we pay in New Zealand? And I appreciate that this might not be super, super spot on, but roughly, how does it work?
We'll keep it simple.
Yeah, keep it simple. Keep it simple.
So coming back to Pumpkin's question before, because it kind of links into this stage, is why is New Zealand's share market punched above its weight? And one of the big reasons for that is we are quite a politically stable country. Up until the last change of government, we had 18 years of only two different people in power, or parties in power. And as a business owner, you want to know what you're playing with effectively. It's a fairly stable environment. So, we're at the bottom end of the world. We're not immune, but the risk of terrorism and those other geopolitical risks are far less here. So New Zealand's seen as a bit of a safe haven for that money. So if there's more money flowing into New Zealand, then that's going to push up the price or the value of our companies on the share market, because more people want those shares.
Right.
There's only a finite number of shares, so the value goes up.
Right.
Of the share market.
Of the share market.
Plus also, I guess, our dollar, presumably.
Yeah. That's another bit flowing alongside it. Right. So coming back to the question around the OCR and the Fed. So New Zealand's had, typically in the past, had a higher interest rate than the Fed. So
what's the Fed?
So, good question. So, the Fed is the Federal Reserve Bank of America.
Right.
Effectively like the Reserve Bank in New Zealand. So, that the Fed is the American equivalent to the OCR here in that context.
Okay.
So right now, the Fed rate is 1.5%. The OCR rate, the New Zealand rate, is 1.75%.
Nice.
That gap has been far greater in the past. The Fed, or the Americans, have increased their interest rate over the last, call it 6 to 12 months, because they've been performing very well as a country and they were at a very low bar to start with.
Talking about that inflation, remember how things get overheated?
Yeah.
The interest rate goes up to kind of keep things in control.
Yeah.
So that's what's happened in the US in the last 6 to 12 months here.
Okay.
Mm. Tying it all together.
Yes, tying it all together.
Trying to anyway.
Trying to, yeah.
So if you are an investor in America, for argument's sake, you could look to New Zealand and say, because back, you know, a little while ago, there was about a 1% difference. I could get an extra 1% by moving my money and investing in the New Zealand share market.
Right.
Than if I invested in the American share market equivalent. And it's politically stable. They've had the same or two governments for 18 years. They're at the bottom end of the country. So the chances of me losing that money is quite low.
Right.
As the Americans increase their interest rate, then the disparity between the two countries becomes less. Nice. And most people quite like the idea of having money in their own country they live in for a number of reasons.
Yeah, okay.
So as the Fed goes up, then effectively it's like a magnet. It's like the light's getting brighter and the moths want to go to where that light is, right? The money comes home.
Yeah.
More or less, if it's presumably it's coming from there, let's say.
Yeah.
It goes back there. It exit like the tide going out.
Yeah.
So right now, I'm looking at the Kiwi dollar, and at the time of speaking, it's just under 70 cents, which is a new low for the in recent history.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at that, and I'm wondering if the noises around the Fed going up is sucking money out of the share market in New Zealand specifically. Would that be a fair comment?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess as it relates to interest rates, that if the value of our dollar is less, there's less happening over here, potentially that could point to, you know, another thing, right? Like interest rates could change as a result of what's happening, right?
Yeah, that's right. No, absolutely. And rather than investing in the share market at all, other asset classes, like we talked about fixed interest, which has lower risk.
Yeah, bonds. Yeah.
All of a sudden becomes to look a lot more attractive because you can get a slightly less return, but with a far lot less risk.
So they're more stable.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So
it's hard to predict, right?
Absolutely.
Where are we going? And that's the whole nature. But I guess the main thing to take from that is that everything is actually interrelated, either directly or indirectly. And if you're investing, you need to be vaguely cognizant of how things relate to each other, because that kind of, to a certain extent, dictates to you when a really good timing is to enter a market or exit. Or if you have a certain time frame for your investments, you need to be thinking about how these things work within each other to figure out what season you're in, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing always comes back to is get some advice.
Yeah. So if people want to get some advice, like you say, and they are a little unsure as to whether they're good enough or whether they have enough money to warrant that advice, what would you say to someone like that who maybe only has 20, 30, 10, who knows, $10,000 in their Kiwi saver? What would you say to them?
Oh, look, I'd still say try and find an advisor that will work with you. At the very least, most of us have Kiwi savers.
Yeah.
And it's for the sake of a 10-minute conversation on the phone, you'll get a fairly good sense of whether a financial advisor is someone you want to work with. Yeah,
and then obviously you got the next level. Maybe there's half a million. Maybe they own their own property, and that's a totally different story.
Totally.
And then it goes up from that. There's all sorts of different people that you meet every day. It reminds me of that song from Sesame Street. You know that song?
Sing it and let us know.
No, I'm not going to.
So many people in your neighborhood? That one?
Yeah. Oh, you don't know it. We're gonna have to learn that for next time. Okay, well, that's good. So, you know, get advice, I guess, is the story here. If anyone's listening and they're wondering where to start, then start with a phone call with someone that you know who you can trust and get some advice, because another perspective can really make all the difference. Now, is there any parting words of wisdom that anyone wants to share? Any key takeouts? Pumpkin, let's start with you. Any key takeout that you have from today?
Well, I guess that I've probably learned that the stock exchange is a little bit less scary than I thought. Yeah, just because I would never have thought it was a good idea, really. Mainly because through media, and stuff, you know, you always see the most dramatic things that happen and it just, it freaks you out. If, you know, what Derek's saying, well, of course it's true.
Of course about, it's true. Derek never lies.
But that 10,000, you know, by now it's worth a lot more than property. But having said that, property's a good avenue to invest in as well. So it's good to know.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to know that, you know, there is more than one option and perhaps the stock exchange is not quite as scary as I thought.
Any key takeout you have from today? I know we've kind of been picking your brain, but is there any key sort of point that you want to emphasize? Or
just the last one we made before, get advice.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't leave it till it's too late.
Yeah, that's right. This isn't something where you kind of just, you're walking into a casino and you're putting $100 on red to win.
That's not really a good strategy long term,
is it?
Absolutely. For the sake of a conversation,
yeah,
you know, it's worth it.
Talk is cheap, man. It's the best place to start. And so my key takeout, just to finish up on, you know, I think that that whole, you know, reality of the stock market, $10,000 invested in the stock market in 1989 worth over, was $113,000 now. That's phenomenal. That's amazing. Mm. You know, I guess we could always say, if only we can go back in time and do that. Well, right now, if you've got a 10-year plus horizon ahead of you, doesn't matter where you start, but whatever you do start, don't fiddle with it. Do it slowly, continuously over the long term, and I'm sure it'll work out right. It's the best you can do, right? Always absolutely. Do your best.
Cool. Absolutely.
All right. Well, this is the NZ Everyday Investor. We've been joined by Derek Blank, authorized financial advisor. People want to find you, Derek, horizon.co.nz?
Horizonadvice.co.nz or 0800 Financial.
0800 Financial. If you want to pick up the phone right now and just start the conversation at the very least with that whole advice conversation, it's free. 0800 Financial, pick up the phone, give them a call, see where it leads to. If they want to find you, Pumpkin, well, they can't find you. You're a vegetable in a garden somewhere.
I'm a mystery.
That's right. You're a mystery lady. No one knows where you came from and where you're going. And if you want to find me, Darcy Ungaro, you can find me on www.ungaro. Would love to hear from you. Until then, if you enjoy this, then please remember to subscribe and share it to a friend. For heaven's sake, share. Don't be so stingy. And until next time. You've been listening to the NZ Everyday Investor, brought to you by podcasts.nz in conjunction with Ungaro & Co. Financial Services. I've been your host, Darcy Ungaro. Please remember to subscribe to the show, and if you'd like to learn more about what we've covered today or any of our guests, please visit us on Facebook. The NZ Everyday Investor contains information and content designed to get you to think about your investment decisions, but none of this is financial advice. Thanks for listening in, and we'll catch you next time around.